All right. Welcome to the Educated Guest Podcast. I'm your host, ZRF. This is episode 10. I'm going to jump right into the disclaimer because I hear people really like the disclaimer. All right. So I got a bunch of crappy opinions and this is my outlet. But in no way, shape, or form do those opinions reflect those of my employer or the association that I work with. And having said that, we're going to jump right into this episode. I know you guys are really wanting, you know, something political, something that has to do with the climate surrounding us today. That's not this episode. This episode, I interview Macedonio Arteaga. He's been on the scene a long time. He's an educator in many ways, but he does work for the San Diego Unified School District as a race and human relations and advocacy department. But he does so much more than that. I mean, at one time he was the arts commissioner for the city of San Diego. He works with a national group called Círculo de Hombres. He works at Teatro Escali. At any rate, he's one of my favorite people, and I wanted to sit down with him and I wanted to pick his brain about a few things. So let's jump into this. Educated Guest Podcast, episode 10, Macedonio Arteaga. All right, we're good. All right, everybody, welcome. Welcome to episode 10 of the Educated Guest Podcast. I'm your host, Caesar Does It. That's D-U-Z-I-T on the Twitters. And I'm here with a special guest, a special friend of mine, a mentor, if you will. If you had an older brother that could just set you straight with a few words, non-threatening words, that would be this man right here that I'm with. His name is Macedonio Arteaga, and welcome to the Educated Guest Podcast.
Thank you.
Where in the hell are we at, bro? What neighborhood is this?
There's going to be probably a lot of questions you're going to ask me have no answers to. I don't know what this neighborhood is called, but it's close to San Diego State, and I'm not kidding. I really don't know what it's called.
So it's not East San Diego, what nice people call City Heights. It's not the college area. It's something a little bit more south and east.
Well, you're bringing up something very interesting because Crawford is literally less than a mile down from here. It's down this hill. And Crawford always gets neglected in this community because it's not City Heights, and then it's not what they call the Diamond District. And Crawford's like right in this weird spot. So they don't get a lot of funding with some of the work that we do in this community. And I kind of fall in that weird, like, it's, I don't even know how to explain it.
Now, I grew up in East San Diego, what people call City Heights. I grew up there until I was about 25 years old, and I never heard of the Diamond District, but I always considered Crawford to be on a part of City Heights. I always considered it to be on the edge, but you're telling me it's technically not.
Well, it is, but it isn't. I mean, the homeboys from around here still consider Crawford part of Eastside territory.
I got you.
You know, so, yeah, I guess I don't really know where I live.
All right. So this is the Educated Guest Podcast, and we talk to educators. We talk to difference makers in the community. I know that you work for San Diego Unified School District, and I'll ask you about that in a minute. But one thing I always do try to ask my guests is, like, where are you from? Where did you go to school?
Well, I was actually born in Michoacán, Mexico, in a small town, Nueva Italia, Michoacán. I came to this country when I was 6 years old, and I actually grew up. We moved in a little neighborhood in PB, actually. There were several of us, immigrants, we all lived in this one block. We all came from Michoacán. It was really weird because it was like this little one block. It was all Mexicanos, and everybody else around there were Caucasians. It was just like this one little block of Mexicans right across the street from Mission Bay High School. Mm-hmm. We started there. Our family migrated there, and then we moved to Claremont, and that's a long story how we got there. I went to Albert Einstein. It was Albert Einstein at the time. It's not called Albert Einstein anymore. It's CPMA now. And then I went to Madison High School. I graduated from Madison High School in 1986. The Madhouse.
You a war hawk.
Yep, all about the Madhouse.
Were they good in football then as they are now? I mean, they're beasts now. They're crazy good.
No, we weren't that good. Not when I was there.
Hey, you know what? You probably don't have time. All the stuff you do, you didn't have time to make it any homecoming games or anything like that, right? I mean, these guys are freaking good on the football field. But you made it back any time recently?
No, I'm not really that big on the whole high school thing, you know, like going back to football games. And I still have friends from high school. We play tennis. We actually play tennis. We try to play at least once a month on Tuesdays, or sometimes we play twice a month. But in terms of going to the football games and all that, I never really got into that part.
And I know that there are teachers in your adult life that have meant or still mean a whole lot to you. Were there any in high school or junior high or elementary that you can remember off top? Any teachers that made a difference in your life?
Well, I've probably told this story a million times, and I think it's important to know. Just and I'll briefly tell you that when I was in high school, I could barely read and write. I'm positive I had a fourth grade reading and math level. I never passed a math class in my whole entire life. I don't know how to do algebra or pre-algebra or geometry. I don't know how to do any of it. I don't even know how to do fractions. Even to this date right now at my age, I don't know how to do it. I never passed a math class. I never read a book in high school. I never read, period. So the reason I'm saying that is that the only reason I stayed engaged in somewhat in school was because I had a drama teacher who my junior and senior year, when I would kind of slip away from my other classes or I got kicked out of my other classes, I became really good at being funny because I figured that if I could make people laugh, nobody would know that I couldn't read. Nobody would know that I couldn't do math. So I would get kicked out. I guess you could think about it now as a calculated comedian, you know.
It sounds like a typical coping mechanism for somebody that struggled in school, right?
Definitely.
So your drama teacher, who's this drama teacher?
Mr. Hollenbeck.
That sounds familiar.
Dennis Hollenbeck. The guy's a legend in San Diego, man.
That sounds really familiar.
Yeah, super cool dude. And he knew I was ditching class, and I would go, if I had drama, I would be there third and fourth period, and he didn't care. You know, he just would let me stay there knowing that I was missing my other classes. And I realized when I got older, you know, when I started working with youth, I started realizing that somewhere he realized that if I didn't stay in his class, I was going to be doing what a lot of the other Chicanito boys was doing, which is, you know, dropping out of school and getting caught up in the neighborhood and just doing stupid things. And or maybe he didn't realize that. Maybe he just didn't care about me. I don't know what it was, but he let me stay in his class. And I continued developing my humor and who I became like as an actor. Mm-hmm. By just like kind of being in this space. And oddly enough, the tennis coach, Miss Rosser, was kind of the same. Every now and then I would ditch and I'd go play tennis on a period I wasn't supposed to be there. She didn't care. You know, and it turns out, you know, these teachers are the ones responsible for kind of like somehow, I guess the word would be containing me in school, where I didn't go out of this, like, if you imagine, like, the zone, I kind of stayed there.
Yeah.
So that, I see them, I saw Ms. Rosser when we first started a young program that I have for Circulo de Hombres, the mentoring program. When I first started at Mission Bay, she was actually there, and I have them right here in my basement where we're talking. I have files of she had records of my tennis matches. She kept all of them, but she also kept all my grades. And we realized, bro, that I wasn't even eligible for all those matches.
Dang.
I have them right here. You know.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah, she invited me to come speak at a Rotary Club. You know, this is years later after I made it through this crazy system, right?
Right, right.
So those two teachers are, I'm never going to forget them because of them, I strongly believe that I was able to kind of just kind of like If you imagine like a freaking little cat just holding on the side of a wall with his little, you know, his little claws, just like just holding on.
That's good. Hey, man, that's amazing. And we're gonna get back to that, because the work that you do with Círculo de Hombres is kind of similar to what those teachers did with you, and that's kind of like not reining people in, but keeping them together, keeping them in a positive space, right? Not letting them outside of that positive space so that they can get involved in something that's really going to damage them. You know what I'm saying? We're going to get back to that in a second. I just want to give people some context now that you're mentioning your cabinets. We're sitting here in Macedonio's dungeon on the edges of East San Diego. I just want to tell you, I'm looking at all kind of shit. I see all kind of Star Wars memorabilia, because Macedonio is a rabid Star Wars fan. He's currently working on a necklace for somebody, Ojo de Venado, the deer's eye necklace with the beads and everything. But I'm looking at all kind of Star Wars stuff. Is that a Lucha Libre mask with a cross behind it?
Yeah, that's a Blue Demo Lucha Libre mask, yeah.
What's the meaning behind that, bro?
Well, actually, it was a Lucha Libre mask, but I cut it and I made it into something. And that's if you could see the moon, that's the rabbit in the moon. It's an old Aztec Homexica story about the moon. If you ever look at a full moon, there's a rabbit in there. There's a story behind that.
And you know what's a trip is that I know that story. And the only reason I know that story is because my son read it in Spanish in like the third grade at his school.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I'm trying to help him with his Spanish homework. And my wife's not around who speaks Spanish, so I had to copy and paste the whole thing into a translator for myself. And that's how I read this story about the rabbit and the moon, bro. That's some crazy shit.
Yeah.
And then I'm staring at a little guitar piece. It's broken behind you. What's up with that, man? I mean, like, it doesn't have the neck on it, man. What's up?
That's a famous artist from New York, and I'm trying to remember his name. Really well-known artist. When our theater company performed out there, we were out there, we made our way to Spanish Harlem, and we met up with this artist. And I know if I remember his name, you're going to know who he is, but he gave us that little guitar there. He signed it for us and everything.
Well, if you remember his name during the course of the interview, just shout it out like you got Tourette's, and we'll get back to it. I just wanted to give our listeners some context of where we were doing this podcast today. Episode 10 of the Educated Guest Podcast, Macedonio Arteaga. We heard a little bit about how you grew up. So a boy who doesn't read or write at his grade level, doesn't understand math to this day, ends up at UCSD.
I think that's
one of the better institutions in California, in the country. How does that happen?
Well, so I was a busboy at Coco's, dishwasher and a busboy at Coco's. Mm-hmm. And there was this one guy, this Chicano guy, I remember, and he kept telling me, dude, you're really smart. You need to go to college. And of course, I didn't believe that. What the hell is this being really smart mean? I mean, I never was told that as a young man. I'm not going to lie. I still am a really good athlete. I believed in my athletic ability, but not any type of intellectual, you know, capacity. Mm-hmm. And this guy kept telling me that. And to make a super long story short, I had a very racist interaction with some folks that came in to eat at the restaurant, and I either had a choice of going back and like physically hurting these people because they'd really put me down and ridiculed me in front of others for being Mexican, or I had to really look inside myself and make a decision. And this guy challenged me. He said, Macedonio, as long as you're not educated, you're not going to have the power to fight back. Mm-hmm. And damn, dude, those words, you know, and I already had heard that, but I think everybody that's listening knows that sometimes you're at the right place at the right time and you hear the right thing and it just sticks. You know, it's like it just sticks, like, and it just stuck to me. And I was so angry. And he says, dude, you got to go to college. So I, with that anger, I enrolled at Mesa College. And funny enough, again, by the time I enrolled, there was hardly any classes open. All there was two Chicano studies classes open. It was Chicano studies through, it was a Chicano studies, a communications class through Chicano studies perspective. And then with Cesar Gonzalez and Mike Ornelas, he had a Chicano studies 141A or something like that, right? Mm-mm. Bro, I didn't know what a freaking Chicano was, you know? I'd never heard that word in my life, you know? But I enrolled in these classes, and these guys became the next mentors of my life. Cesar Gonzalez and Mike Ornelas, I actually just saw Mike last week. You know, they politicized me, educated me, and I took off from there.
So he's doing okay.
Oh, Mike just retired. Cesar retired several years ago. He's hanging in there. I know he's in the hospital. But Mike is still around, yeah, and he still comes out and supports a lot of the work that we do. So, yeah, I mean, that guy, I remember that first class I had with him. I mean, dude, I couldn't read. I couldn't write. I couldn't even understand what the hell I was reading in those books. I just didn't read. Mm-hmm. And I would just kind of listen and listen. I didn't really know how to take notes. I'd never taken notes in my life, right? And one day he pulled me, maybe about 4 weeks after the class had started, he pulled me into his office. He said, I want to talk to you. And I said, what's up, man? He goes, you're one of the smartest students I've ever had. And of course, I'm thinking, this guy's full of shit,
He's
man.
Blowing smoke. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's blowing smoke.
Yeah. I'm allowed to say shit, right? Yeah.
We're PG-13
okay,
here, bro.
Okay, great.
We're good.
And I was like, come on, dude. In my head, I'm thinking, he's full of shit. He's like, man, you're brilliant. You answer all these questions, you're a critical thinker. I'm thinking, what the fuck is a critical thinker, right?
You can say fuck too, don't trip.
Okay,
fuck. It's all good. All right,
but that was it. And then, you know, we kind of got into it. I got really pissed at him, and he said, like, you know, you need to take notes. You're not going to get anywhere in life if you don't take notes in class, and da 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 da, and you're not going to amount to do anything in college. He told me that. I told him to fuck off. I said, man, fuck you, man. I'll fucking pass your class. And me thinking, how the fuck am I gonna pass this class if I can't even read? Aww. You know what I mean? And sure enough, I passed this class. I got a B, and I passed my communications class, speech class with Cesar Gonzalez. And but they just started, I started realizing what it was to be a Chicano, what it was to, like, all the history that wasn't taught to me, all the things that happened to me in high school that weren't a coincidence, and all the things that were happening to my brothers and sisters in the educational system that they were being pushed out. You know, I started realizing when I got to college, and that you're talking about adding fuel to the fire. It gave me more motivation. And like some of you that are probably out there, when I became a born again Chicano, and that's what did it, man. I was,
yeah, let me throw out the parallel for you real quick. All right, I'm going to throw out the parallel. I never had Gonzalez, but I did end up at Mesa College, and I wasn't politicized as a high school student. Neither were you. I mean, that avenue just wasn't there. And I got to Mesa, and I took Ornella's class, and wow, next thing you know, that's how I'm in Mecha, and that's how I meet you. I mean, that's it. I mean, I had Ornelas too. He wouldn't remember me from shit because I had one class with him. I think he was the Mecha advisor because he would come into the office and he'd be there, you know, every other day. So I'm pretty sure he was our advisor.
Were you at Mecha when they were in the bungalows still?
Yeah, the bungalows.
Wow.
Yeah, I was in the bungalows.
Yeah.
And man, I was with your comadre, so because she went there too.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, we were in the bungalows, dude. I took Ornelas' class. I kind of figured out, like, shit, yeah, this is kind of my experience here. Like,
it's awesome.
I'm not quite here and I'm not quite there. I'm a Chicano, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And there it was. So there's the parallel, bro. Shit. All right, we're going to take a little break and be right back with Macedonio in just a second. I wanted to shout out the unofficial sponsors of the Educated Guest podcast. These are businesses that have little to no idea that we exist, but I still would like to shout them out in the hopes that they might catch wind and throw us a little product. Human Catalyst on 3rd Avenue. It's a clothing and style store. They got some really dope stuff. And then there's one of my favorite breweries in San Diego, From Chula Vista. Not located in Chula Vista, but definitely from Chula Vista, and that's Groundswell Brewery. They got one of the best beers that I've ever tasted, and I think it's going to put them on the map. And I'd love to be sipping on some crisp and cool Groundswell brew if I could, so I want to shout you out. And now we get back to the show. And so you ended up at UCSD. You finished up. How did you end up working for the district?
Well, I went to UCSD, and then when I graduated, I got a job working for an organization called Triple Crown. And Triple Crown at the time was run by Ray Smith, whose actual son played in the NFL, Akili Smith. He was a quarterback for the Bengals for a while.
Oh, I know Akili very well.
Remember Akili Smith?
I know Akili.
Yeah. And just for the record, my team beat him, and I was the quarterback. And the only reason that my team beat him was because nobody could catch the ball. He threw it so hard. But anyway, so when I came out of college, I started working for this nonprofit that they had their offices on Imperial and around 70th over uh-huh. there. I mean, in the hood, dude. I mean, that place was popping at the time, man. There was so much violence going on with the Crips and Bloods and Piru. And so I was the first Chicano they hired to work there, because it was all African Americans at the time, and they were doing like gang intervention mm-hmm. and just trying to, you know, work in that neighborhood. It was just, there was so much violence at that time. But they got some money to work in San Ysidro. So they hired me. I worked at 3 low-income housing projects in San Ysidro. I was there for 4 years. And that's where I started doing this work with the young men. I created my own circle. I started taking young people from San Ysidro to the Sweat Lodge and to learn more about their culture and history. Mm-hmm. So it was that organization that gave me the opportunity. And then from there, I jumped to Family Health Centers of San Diego, Logan Heights Family Health Center at the time. And they got a big grant to do a Circulo de Hombres program. And they hired me to do it. And when I was there, the district, 4 years later, the San Jose School District started something called the YAMA. You know, that your mom worked for, with Irma Castro.
Oh, okay, yeah. You know? That's right, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Double L-A-M-A, yeah. YAMA, there you go, I got you.
And they had Niñas Eslan. And
that's
they,
right.
Man, that one of the most powerful programs I've ever seen in the country. And I've traveled to visit other programs around the U.S., and there's never been a more powerful program than that Niñas Eslan, man. They mentored so many little girls, dude. It was powerful. I mean, thousands. They would have like breakfast with like in the convention center, and they have these huge award banquets. So they wanted to do like a male component of that. And that's when they started the Circo de Hombres, Hombre Noble. And then they hired me. They took me to do that for the district. Mm-hmm. And that was 15 years ago. And I've been there since. So dang, Caesar, now that I think about it, my work, in terms of once I got out of college, I've always been working with young people in that specific, really, it's a specialty, man, because you have to have certain qualities to do it, you know, and I've always been there working with young people who really have, everybody pretty much has given up on, you know, and yeah, man, it's been 15 for the district and then 4 and 4. So, yeah, it's been about 24, 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And so what would you say it is that you do now for the district? I mean, the job has probably changed, right? I mean.
Yeah. No, it's definitely changed. I don't do as many of the mentoring programs as I used to. I still do them, but not as many as I used to. But now I train teachers. Like, I train teachers on something called culture proficiency, which basically – culture proficiency just challenges teachers to kind of look inside themselves to see how maybe some of their biases or even some of their values are impacting young men of color or young people of color. So I train them with that. I do mediations in the district. I do restorative practice in the district. So it's still kind of in the same area because it's still helping, you know, the youth that need it the most.
Yeah. So I work down in the Sweetwater District, and we're kind of late to all that shit. We're just getting the restorative training. I think there's certain pilot schools. You have to start like now with the kids that are just going to school now, with the teachers that are just starting now. I mean, I don't know. Some people are not going to like the fact that I said that, along with what you said.
But I agree with you, dude.
But I always totally throw out the I always throw out the disclaimer when I start the show off. I always say, the opinions here are ours and ours only, and are in no way a reflection of any of the institutions we have worked for or are currently working for. All right,
that's
hold up.
All good, yeah.
All right, welcome back, episode 10 of the Educated Guest Podcast. All right, Macedonia, I want to get into some other good stuff, some really good stuff. So we talked about your education. We talked about some teachers early on that have changed your life. But you have teachers now that you still refer to, you still look up to, that have changed your life in also very profound ways. I mean, tell us a little bit about one or two of them. Who are your teachers now?
Well, I think right when you said that, the one that comes to mind the most is Jerry Thayil. He really taught me. When I was in college, Cesar Gonzalez pulled me in class and he said, Macedonio, you're going to grow up to be a great, great man. And I didn't believe him. I just thought, you know, whatever. And he said, I want you to remember something. He said, don't let the community swallow you. Mm. And I was like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Like, mm-hmm. What community? I was so clueless, right?
Yeah.
And I realized, because I was very close to dying at one time, I was really, really sick. I realized that I allowed the community to swallow me. And my body was destroying its own red blood cells, which is hemolytic anemia, right? Autoimmune. It was destroying its own red blood cells, which is oxygen. And bro, I remember clearly I had less than half of the hemoglobins that you should have in your body, which is oxygen. And my doctor, who I've known for years and we have a great relationship, came in and he said, Macedonio, he said, if your red blood cells don't go up like a tiny bit tomorrow morning, he goes, it's not looking good for you anymore. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, you might not even make it through the night. My lips were turning purple because it doesn't take much intelligence to know if your lips are purple, that means
you're not getting oxygen.
You're not getting oxygen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy when your lips start turning purple, bro. And he said, if your red blood cell goes down, we have to do a blood transfusion. And the only problem is if we do a blood transfusion, we're risking this autoimmune disease might reject your blood and you won't make it.
No, you absolutely won't make it at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, what? You know, so as I was falling asleep, Cesar Gonzalez just freaking pops out. And he's like, don't let the community swallow you. And it started realizing that, and not to blame anybody, not to be angry at anybody, because those were all decisions that I made where I was so involved. I invested so much of my heart, my mind, my body, my spirit in the community that I didn't even know who Macedonia was. The dude didn't even exist. It's like a phantom to me. And I was there lying in bed, dying. On my way to the spirit world, I started saying bye to every... Dude, you even showed up. Your ugly ass showed up right there. I said bye to all my friends, bro.
I'm surprised you didn't die, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was... I'm saying bye to everybody. Towards the end, I see my family, my mom, and my wife. And there's this incredible light, dude, coming. And I've never felt this light. It was so beautiful. And it just took over my whole body. And I was like, this is beautiful. I want to go to that light. I want to go there. This is better than anything I've ever experienced in my life. I started going in there. At the end of the road of that light, my daughter was there. It's the only person I hadn't seen. My little daughter, she was probably about 8 years old. She was there. She put her finger up and nodded like this. And then she did this in a circle. And I just, my spirit, whoosh, I just turned around. I came right back.
What?
In the morning, the doctor came in and he says, Mr. Ortega, how are you doing? He's like, we're going to take your blood. I hope your blood went just at least stabilized. And I said, I'm going to be all right. He's like, what do you mean? I said, I had a good dream last night. And I said, I know what I have to work on. I know what I have to do. And they took my red blood cells. It went up like a tiny, 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 tiny decimal, but it went up. And I told him, I'm going to be fine, you know? And but Cesar Gonzalez told me that. And so he was a huge mentor. Now, Jerry, after I made that transformation, Jerry Theo has been the person in my life who, if life gets a little tricky sometimes, I can't figure something out, then I call him. Mm-hmm. And he always calls me back. He'll call me, you know, as soon as he can. And I go up to visit him or, I mean, he really is the person right now in my life that I think about when I really need somebody. He's always there for me. Yeah, it has to be Jerry Theo.
And did you meet him with your work with the Circulo? Is that how it goes?
At Family Health Centers of San Diego, yeah.
Okay, okay. So I think we do need to take a second and talk about your work with Circulo de Hombres, because a lot of my listeners may not know what it is. All 21 of my listeners, that's the joke. They don't know what it is, bro. there's not a whole lot, and half of them are my family. So talk to me a little bit about your work with the Circulo. It takes a lot of work to make that happen. I've been with you to the first two. I stopped by a couple of years ago on them. What is it that you do? Explain to my listeners what you do out there.
So we're talking about restorative practice. This is not a new thing. We've been doing what they refer to as restorative practice since I've started doing this work. And it's an old model that we as indigenous people have had and have always been doing for thousands of years on this continent. So the basic premise is that we work with young men. We have a rites of passage for them. And we do it in a restorative way. That means that every young man that comes into my program does not get suspended or expelled until they've talked to me about it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I work it out so they don't get suspended. So they stay in the circle. So they stay in the school. And basically, they're all the Macedonians of the world who can't read, who can't do math, who have pretty much given up. And My job, honestly, Caesar, is to help them somehow, to guide them, not help them, to guide them somehow for them to see the beauty that they have inside, mm-hmm. you know, because every child has it. They all have it. It doesn't matter how angry they are. If they're, man, dude, I've worked with some, bro, just right here in the neighborhood, man. I work with some brothers that freaking call me in the middle of the night because they just shot somebody, you know, like, damn, homie, you got to. What's up, man? And, oh, man, I just shot some fool right here.
I'm probably going to edit this part out so as not to incriminate you. But
Well, I'm allowed to say that. I already talked to my lawyer. You know what I mean? Actually, I don't have to report that because as a counselor, you're allowed.
You're
to
protected by you're the protected. Law, huh?
No, I seriously called the lawyer that night because I was like, holy shit, am I supposed to know all this? You know, and I already knew a bunch of other stuff from other students. But this one just like. Anyway, I won't get into what happened, but
yeah. Let's get back to the circle.
So again, the connection is that it's not my job to judge this brother. You know what I'm saying? I could easily say, "Oh, you're fucking up the circle. You're making us look bad, homie.
Gotta go.
You gotta go." But what am I doing, dude? I'm doing what society does, which is I'm working with the kids that are just like they're already at the bottom. They're just clinging on. They're holding on to something. Or a lot of times they're holding on to nothing. And I am like that last little piece that maybe they could cling on to something and start believing in themselves. So if I say, yeah, you know what, homie, fuck you. You're out of the group. Then what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, then I shouldn't be doing this work. I should be doing something else. You know, and God, you don't even know, dude, how many times I've gotten into it with administrators, counselors, people in the community that have told me, oh, you got to kick that kid out. You got to kick him out. You got to kick him out. I mean, I won't say her name, dude, but there's a very powerful woman in Logan who wanted me to kick out like some really young men that are really powerful leaders now in our community.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I see the power in that kid. Just like Cesar saw the power in me, or he made me believe I had something, and Mike Ornella saw it in me, then I see it in some of these young men. They may not see it at the time, but I see it. I'm like, oh, shit, that's one powerful kid right there.
Yeah.
You know, so that, I guess in a nutshell, that's what the Circulo is about. You know, creating a sacred space for these young men to start talking about what's going on in their mind, their body, their spirit. You know, what are the lies they were told? Who are they really? You know, for them to start discovering who they really, really are, not what society says they are. And I think for me, dude, there's nothing more rewarding than just watching these young men, like, become something after so many times being told they're nothing and having that rage, that anger, and that freaking violence, dude. Well, dude, I roll with some dudes that, man, well, I wouldn't even talk. I can't even talk about that. That's pretty scary. But
so I just want to throw out there for my listeners that, you know, one of the main facets of the Circulo that I remember is that you take as many men, young men, as you can out into the land, you know, east, usually on a reservation, and we live off the land. We talk together, and we engage. I want to call it ceremony, but I don't want to kind of use that word. But we engage in indigenous practices. We do the sweat lodge, and I just want to tell you, I've gotten more out of sweat lodge. I've gotten more healing out of sweat lodge than I have in 30 years of church.
Mm.
You know, I didn't subscribe to these ways at first, especially when I was in college. It just seemed so foreign to me, man. I was just like, those dudes are tripping, dude. You know what I mean? Like, I got to get back in these books and pass this class. Like, these dudes are going to go, nah, I can't do it. But going out there with the Circulo, living off the land, I mean, I think I want to ask you, what I want to ask you is, when did you start practicing indigenous ways? When did you realize that that was something for you? Because that's a tough choice, man. I'm sure you grew up with the church or something
Yeah, no, I grew up with the church, but something very interesting is that my dad always told us that we were somos indios.
Uh-huh.
He was saying, nosotros somos indios. You know, and I didn't really understand what that meant either, that we were Indian. I didn't really grasp that.
Depending on who's saying it, it's not a compliment.
Yeah, exactly. But my dad would say it with pride.
Yeah.
You know, and he wasn't very happy when he referred to Spaniards. So I grew up with that in my house.
You at least understood that. I didn't.
Yeah, no, I did. You know, and so I kind of understood that. But it wasn't until college, you know, when Mike and Seth had I'd say woke me up, you know, that I started realizing, you know what, I wanted to learn what tribe I came from in Mexico and what my indigenous culture. And I started dancing with an Aztec dance group here. And they're the ones that took me to my first sweat lodge on the reservation in Manzanita with Uncle Nick. And that's when I started asking, man, this is where I belong, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, even my mom went to the sweat lodge. My grandma used to love to go to the sweat lodge. So I like to say that I reintroduced it to our family.
Okay.
You know, my brothers and sisters, they've all been there. They still go, you know what I mean? And my nephews, most of them have grown up, you know, understanding what the sweat lodge is, sweating and their culture and history. So, man, what Cesar and Mike did wasn't just for me. Actually, yeah, it was just, we're talking about for generations of young people. And I credit them, man.
Okay.
They're the ones that did it.
Okay.
Because that wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them.
Okay. All right. Because, I mean, like I said, it was a big change for me. So I just wondered when you made the choice that was how you were going to live your life. Because, I haven't completely committed to that way of life, but I try to get out with you as often as I can. Not nearly as often enough. But, you know, I just wanted to know when you decided that was the way that you were going to live. So you've taken part in some serious ceremonies, though, haven't you?
Oh, man, I've been in some. We have a Sundance ceremony, and that's pretty intense. I don't really like to talk too much about that ceremony, but it is really intense in terms of, you know, fasting for 4 days, sitting on a mountain by yourself for 4 days without food and water. I mean, just sitting there. You talk about facing your fears, bro. Sitting on a mountain by yourself, in a mountain by yourself, when it gets pitch dark, that, to me, that is what it is to become a man. because you face every fear you can possibly. An ant becomes the size of a dinosaur. You know, a butterfly sounds like 20 helicopters, man. Mm-hmm. Once that sun goes down, bro, it's a whole other world. And you know what? You're there by yourself. And you have no food. And you have no water. So imagine what happens to your mind and your body and your spirit when you're put under that condition. That's that's called an intense rites of passage, dude.
Well, I can tell you the science of what happens to your body,
well, yeah,
but,
I'm sure
but
you
I can't tell you. I can't tell you what it's like to be out there. I mean, your body at that point is literally eating the fat of itself to try to sustain, and you enter this state called ketosis, and it's supposed to be like this heightened state of being. But as far as the no water part, I'm not sure how you pull that off. You ever taken part in a peyote ceremony?
Yeah, we have those ceremonies too. And I think what I like for the listeners that are listening is to really understand that like the peyote to us is not like something where you're kicking back with the homies. Hey, fool, let's get some peyote, fool. You know,
you're not at Burning Man concert or whatever.
Exactly.
Fucked up out of your tree. What are you doing it for?
It's a very sacred ceremony where it's guided by elders, by a medicine man or medicine woman. They guide you. You go inside of a teepee, let's say around 8 o'clock, and you stay in there the whole night till about 8 o'clock in the morning. And we sing traditional songs. There's actually a fire, and the fire gets, the fire is, and this is real basic stuff. I'm not going to get into details, but the ashes get made into certain elements according to where you are in the night, you know, and it's really beautiful. And like I said, we're not going in there because it's a party. We're going in there to go inside of ourselves, you know, and to travel really inside yourself. Inside the fire, which ultimately is you travel through the universe, you know. And I've only done that a couple times. You know, I really want to do that a little bit more this year, but it's something that you can get to that now at my age. I'm not that old. I'm 49. I don't consider myself to be old, but yeah, I've been able to get to that state of mind without having to use that medicine.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What I heard about the couple of times that idea, that ceremony has come up is usually it's for a person that needs to go inside of themselves. Usually it's a person that hurting, you know, not necessarily looking for a transformation, but looking to go inside of themselves and find, I don't know, man. I mean, what are you hoping to find? What are you hoping to see?
I think more than anything, and the reason why I say, like, I don't feel I have to do a lot of these ceremonies anymore, because I'm doing them every day. Mm-hmm. Like every time, like I take a breath, I'm doing it because it's become automatic for me. And sometimes I go off of that and I have to come back to it,
okay.
You know? So, it's like if you did any sport, sports is probably the easiest analogy. You know, you learn to hit a baseball. After a while, I mean, when you're learning, you can't hit it for crap, you know. But after a while, you can read a fastball. You can read when it's going to curve. You could read this. It becomes automatic. So spirituality, brother, it's the same thing. If you practice it so much, your body starts to do, your mind starts to do it automatically. And there is sometimes where you can't hit that freaking fastball. You know, you can't. You're not reading it. Mm-hmm. And it happens. So sometimes you veer off a little bit and you may get sick because you're not paying attention to your body or whatever it is. And then you have to go back. You know, you have to go back and practice it. And I honestly feel like I'm consistently practicing it without having to be in the sweat lodge, without having to be on the mountain, without having to be in the peyote ceremony. Because it's become part of my it's part of my life. Right now, making this necklace, dude, the whole time I'm in ceremony.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I do some of this bead work that you see here right there to your right. This is one little bead at a time, bro. I mean, I know the viewers can't see this, but see this? This isn't one like thing that I cut out and put right here. That's one tiny bead at one time.
No, I got you. I'll snap a flick of this and I'll put it on the podcast when people listen to it, that'll come up on their screen just so they know what the heck we're talking about here. But
so that is a peyote button right there.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's a peyote button. So imagine, Caesar, what kind of patience it takes to put one tiny little bead at one time on that little thing. And then you have to make it flow like that, right? So I had no idea what was going to go on there. It just happens.
Gotcha.
Right? So you have to be in a really, I don't know where you have to be. I'm not going to tell you where I know because I don't know shit. But I do know that you have to be somewhere to get there. You know? You have to be.
Word. All right. Welcome back, Educated Guest Podcast, Episode 10, Macedonio Arteaga. We're going to switch it up a little bit, and we're going to talk about what it takes to get you active politically because, you know, I seen you maybe endorse two people, but it doesn't seem like politics is really your thing. Do I got you wrong? I mean, you don't seem like you really like or are comfortable running in those circles or doing those kinds of activities, but I did see you endorse a couple of people recently. Why'd you come out for them?
Well, David Alvarez he worked for the Circulo. I hired him in National City.
Okay.
He was a young man that I mentored when he was real young.
Okay.
And right before he ran for mayor, he called me up and he said, "Hey, man, let's go play tennis," you know, and I didn't play tennis with him ever, you know, and I said, "Oh, let's do that, bro." And we went out and we played some tennis, and then he told me that he was going to run for mayor, and we spent most of the day together that day.
Okay.
You know, and I think I realized obviously he was looking for me to help him out and endorse him and get the word out, and I love that guy, man. I loved him since he was a little boy.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy, and I want to see him go far.
He is. He sticks to his principles. He doesn't change it. He's not the traditional politician, you know, and he's not going to do the whole, like, "I'll do this if you do this." I haven't known him to do that, and I never knew him to be like that. So that's why I supported him.
Okay.
You know, Georgette Gomez is another one who she's grown up in our circle. I mean, we're talking about the sweat lodge and the peyote ceremonies. Well, these are her traditional ways as well.
Okay.
She's grown up with, I mean, she's been right here in my basement. And if you look at the necklace she's wearing, bro, if you look at any picture right now, I made it for her.
Is that right?
She's wearing it. You know what I mean?
So that was an easy endorsement.
Yeah, it was an easy endorsement. And she's one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met in my life.
Oh, man. That's,
you know?
That's a real big endorsement right there.
She's so freaking loving, dude. It's ridiculous. You know? So how could you not support beautiful human beings like that, you know? But I'm not going to make a habit of it, dude. I really don't like it, you know what I mean? But they call me, and, you know, if they call me, it's like, you know, I've had a lot of other politicians, my wife knows, they've called my house, they've called me, and I just don't do it. You know, I don't. I helped out Louis, you know, a few years ago.
Louis Natividad, National City. Yeah.
He's always been, he's another great mentor I've had in my life, dude. He's always there for me. I call Louis right now. Dude. If I call Louis and tell him, "Hey, Louis, I need you to be at the Circulo meeting," he'll show up. He'll show up. You know, that's the kind of, you know what, Caesar? I've learned from so many men and women, and I see their great qualities, and I try to take those great qualities and make them part of me. You know, and I think that the thing that hurts me the most to hear people say is, "Oh, I pulled myself off of my bootstraps."
Uh-huh.
Because there's absolutely no truth to that, dude.
No way. No way in hell.
No human on this planet pulls themselves up from the... It's not possible.
We always stand on somebody's shoulders,
right? We always do. And for you to acknowledge them, dude, is the most disrespectful thing you could possibly do. You know, I don't even think... I just think of... Right now we're talking, dude, I think of so many people that I'm here because of them. I'm not here because Macedonia was that great and he did that. That's fucking bullshit, dude. You know what I mean? That's bullshit. That's arrogance, and that's Republican, and that's, you know, it's a lie. It's a freaking lie.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, I went off topic a little bit.
Nah, man, not at all. Not at all. And it's a trip that you brought up, Louis, because you know what? For a good couple of years there, I was around a lot of events that he was at, and even he was kind of like a mentor during that time.
Yeah.
David Valladolid, the same way. Like, I don't hang out with that dude now, and I don't, you know, I haven't seen him in probably like 10 years, but there was a time when we were at a lot of events, same events together, and even he, I would consider like a mentor to what we were doing at that time. I mean, there's just a lot of people that I've come in contact with that have helped me along the way.
Yeah, they all give us this little sprinkle, you know what I mean? They give us like a little something, and I mean, Chunky for me, who just, you know, you just crossed over. You know, and I might get a little emotional, but I think the greatest lesson I ever learned in life was from Chunky, and he would call me all the time, and he'd tell me crazy jokes, you know, but when it was time for me and him to get serious sometimes, we're eating or in the car, he's just one of those human beings, bro, that you're never in your life going to meet somebody who never, ever said anything bad about anybody. I guarantee you won't meet that person. You're not going to meet them. I spent so much time with Chunky since I was in junior college. Sometimes just me and him kicking it. I never heard him say anything bad. Even when people screwed him over, he never said nothing bad about him. And I couldn't understand it. I would get mad for him. I would get mad. I said, you know what, Chunky, that's fucked up, man. They only paid you $50 to come and speak. They had a $60,000 budget. What do you mean they only gave you $50?
Yeah.
You know, and I would go to those people and say, what the fuck? You need to give them some more. And he would never say nothing bad, you know? And my goal in life is actually to grow up to be like that.
Okay.
To never say anything bad about people and to not like fully take things personally. He just didn't, bro. I'm telling you, it's the quality that I mean, even Jerry. I mean, Jerry says bad things about people. You know what I mean? But he has other great qualities. But, you know, Chunky never did, bro. And that's, man, you talk about a mentor, dude. Oh, man. He just, the stories he would tell me, the jokes. And I mean, it's just, to me, I'm still waiting for him to call me. I'm still waiting for him to show up. He sang at my wife's birthday, my birthday, my daughter's birthday, my mom's funeral, my dad's birthday. I mean, what a mentor, dude. That's a freaking legend, bro. That's a legend of legends.
No, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I almost feel like we should probably end the podcast on that kind of a note. So I am going to ask you one last question that kind of follows up. What is the work that you're most proud of? What is the work that touches you the most?
I have no clue, man. I think I have. Jerry Thayer told me I have one of the worst problems in the world, and I asked him, "Well, what's my problem, Jerry?" He says that you're really good at a lot of things. And that's a bad thing. Huh. And I said, why? And he says, because you need to focus on one thing. Like, if I really, really focused, the Circle would probably, we'd probably have a staff of 20 people already with their own building and offices. But I'm also an artist, and I love performing on stage. I mean, Death Three Scotties perform all over the United States. I love to do that. Like, we actually have a meeting tonight, you know, I love to do that, and I love to do the circulo. You know, I love to sit here and just do my beadwork, and, you know, I love to write, and it's like I don't believe I'm good at any of these things. I'm glad Jerry believes that. I just do whatever the hell I do. And I don't even know what the hell I'm doing, period. I just do it. Mm-hmm. I'm just having fun. So if you ask me what I'm the most proud of, I don't know, dude. I'm just glad that I can accomplish things that I want to accomplish, period.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Yeah, it was kind of a shitty question. I was kind of setting you up to tell me something where you cry or something like that. I was hoping to end on a powerful note. But you know what? This whole discussion has been powerful. And we're going to end the podcast. But I just want to tell you that you and I are just barely beginning the conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave tonight, and I'm going to think about all the things that I should have asked you. But they just weren't meant to come out at this time.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
I hear you.
But we're going to pick up these mics again in the near future, and we're going to keep digging at stuff together, because these are the kind of conversations that I want to have with educators, with difference makers such as yourself. You have a lot to share with the world, and this is just one of the mediums that I want you to share it on. You know what I mean?
I hear you, bro. I really appreciate it, and I thought about this morning is a lot of times we as human beings, we don't appreciate things, and I was hiking this morning in the mountains, and I said, you know, how more grateful can I be that another human being actually wants to hear what I have to say? If you're not humbled and you're not grateful by that, then I'm not really clear what path you're walking on, you know, because, you know, a lot of people ask me, and I've been in master theses, PhDs, and I go speak, but every single time, bro, it doesn't matter who, whether it's like to 10 Metcha kids, or it doesn't matter. I'm always really, really grateful and thankful and think, damn, why the fuck do they want to hear me talk? Mm-hmm. You know? But if they do, I'm just going to be grateful and thankful, because the reality is I don't even know if I'm going to wake up in the morning, bro. I don't know. So that's it.
The way people are flying off these days, man, yep. You just never know, man.
You don't know.
All right. And on that note, episode 10, Educated Guest Podcast, Macedonio Arteaga. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're out. Yo, all right, that's it, folks. That's the last, all right, we'll start that one again. All right, thank you for listening. We're going to come back with a quick episode. I'm going to do a solo shot. We're going to get into Wear Red for Ed. We're going to get into the Devo Station of Public Education. We're going to get into a lot of stuff. We're going to do our best to keep it public ed, but I'm going to get down with it. So be on the lookout for episode 11, because it's going to come at you real quick. All right. Thank you for listening to the Educated Guest Podcast. This is your host, Zarf, a.k.a. Caesar Does It on the Twitters. Peace.